The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business, individual, anyone, or anything. Hey, everybody. I'm Sarah Edmondson.
And I'm Anthony Ames, a.k.a. Nippy.
And we just want to welcome you to season three of A Little Bit Culty. Once upon a time, we were in a cult called Nexium.
We didn't know it was a cult when we joined, because as a wise man once said, nobody joins a cult. They join a good thing.
For a minute, it was a good thing. That's where we met, fell in love, got married, started a family.
The stuff of storybooks.
Even the part where we woke up, escaped, became whistleblowers, and helped bring it all down? You call that shit show a storybook?
Seeing the mastermind of Nexium get sentenced to 120 years in prison? That's a storybook ending, if you ask me.
The whole thing was captured on HBO's hit docuseries, The Vow.
A new season is coming out any moment, if it isn't out already by the time you hear this.
And I published a memoir called Scarred, which is available anywhere books are sold.
And now we have a podcast.
Every week on A Little Bit Culty, we call on experts, advocates, fellow survivors, and whistleblowers to help us unpack what's going on in the cultiverse.
And now we're turning our story into wisdom for other people.
Like, I wish I'd known that calling yourself Vanguard was a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, big red flag. We've got a lot to cover. So let's get this show rolling, shall we?
Welcome to A Little Bit Culty, an Acast podcast about the fads, beliefs, and trends that blur the line between devotion and destruction. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And to learn more, visit us on Instagram or alittlebitculty.com. Hello, Anthony.
Who's Anthony?
I mean, Nippy.
Did you ever call me Anthony? Like, to my face? It doesn't stick.
I tried. I think when I'm kind of mad at you, I call you Anthony.
That's never.
Which is so rare, because you're most perfect husband imaginable.
But okay, fine.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Per usual. Yeah. You know, I'm never doing bad. Rarely totally awesome. I'm pretty neutral. You know, steady hand over here. Doing my peptide stack, as you well know.
Do you want to tell the audience about your peptide stack?
Just look it up. It's too complex right now. Ben Greenfield does a little thing on it. Of course, someone's probably going to say he's a cult leader, but I'm not in it. I just listen to some of his content.
And inject peptides into your body.
And they work.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Really happy for you. You know, everyone's got to find their path.
Oh,
right?
Is that the disclaimer? That was hey, whatever works for you.
Well, that was more of the segue.
Whatever works
I was trying
for
to
you.
Find a segue
hey,
to...
at least you're happy.
Everybody's looking for their path.
Didn't we get a lot of that shit? And we were like, hey, look, I'm glad it's working for you. And we're like, yeah, but I can see how it works for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately that's why people left us alone. They're like, well, I guess they're happy.
Yeah.
That was actually one of the questions that I thought was interesting that came from our audience, which was from Explosive Figs. Great name, by the way.
Explosive Figs?
Yeah, on Instagram.
Oh, I can have fun with that one.
I would like to ask you both, hopefully for the next episode, what did you think about other cults while being in Nexium? Or maybe what did Keith think about other cults? Were they ever brought up or discussed? Thanks for the great work you do. Thanks, Explosive
Thank
Figs.
Thank you, Explosive Figs. That's a band name for sure. You go into the Explosive Figs concert, and then like if you wanted to hide it from your parents, you guys listen to some EF?
Yeah.
Right? Oh, EF's in town.
Yeah. Did you get Explosive Figs' newest single?
Anyway, great question. You want to kick it around first?
What's your thought on that? I have my thoughts. You go first.
We kind of kicked this around a little bit when we were like, we could totally see when other people were in a cult, and we could nail it, right? We just couldn't see.
To a degree, because that was part what we were trained, is that when people are in a cult, there's something bad that's going on. Like people are stealing money, or they are drinking goat's blood, or, you know, there's some sort of deception.
Okay, so,
right?
But do you remember like when Landmark would come up and we were kind of like, yeah, it has a culty feel to it. Meanwhile, ours was way more culty.
Ours was way more culty, but it was like, people would always be like, oh yeah, the recruitment's so pushy in Landmark. Right. And we're like, yeah, we don't do that. And we also thought that that was, we called it, we'll save this also for the Landmark episode if we can ever get there. Still looking for a whistleblower, by the way. Nobody wants to talk about it because they don't want to get sued. But
right.
Well, but we used to say that Landmark was the McDonald's of personal growth and ours was the gourmet food of personal growth.
Oh my God.
So embarrassed to say that. We thought it was, ours was so much better. But also, I remember when Going Clear came out, which was, we were still in Nexium, we were encouraged to not watch it because it was a smear campaign against Scientology.
I don't remember that at all.
I remember seeing a clip of like the, you know, Tom Cruise jumping on Oprah's couch and how that sort of became like the media bite for it.
Certainly a symptom of something.
It's, yeah, but I remember somebody saying, hey, like, he's happy. Who are we to say what he does? Like, it's none of our business. And I think that was sort of, that was what was implanted. And I kind of ran with that. I was like, yeah, it's just like, who's anyone to say what makes me happy? Like, and judge me. They don't know what goes on here. They don't understand. So I was like, well, I don't understand. Yeah. I'm like, I don't understand what happens in Scientology. And neither did I care to or do the research until, of course, I got out and watched Going Clear. I was like, holy shit. Anyway. Digress.
I think that answered the question.
I think that answers the explosive figs question.
Back to the point about not having a Landmark whistleblower.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what keeps these things intact is because people aren't willing to speak out and that they're legally protected.
Right.
So it's hard to just say someone to suck it up and do it, but that is a fact. And that's the whole thing around, you know, evil wins when good people do nothing.
Yeah. And well, people have been scared to speak with NDAs and threats of legal suits. And one of the things I'm really proud about with our guest today is he's just made it his life to shine light on a group called the IFB, Independent Fundamental Baptist Church, IFB. And there's a dark cloud hanging over this church.
This quote from a major investigative report published by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram in 2018 paints the picture. Quote, from Connecticut to California, the stories are tragically similar. A music minister molested a 15-year-old girl in North Carolina and moved to another church in Florida.
Another girl's parents stood in front of their Connecticut congregation to acknowledge their daughter's sin after she was abused by her youth pastor, beginning at 16.
Four women accused a pastor in California of covering up sexual misconduct and shielding the abusers over almost 25 years.
And so much more. Honestly, I was very disturbed in researching the backstory for this guest. We're going to put a link to some news reports that were sent to us to research. And just to let you know, massive trigger warning. It's very upsetting what's been done to a lot of boys and girls in the IFB.
For those of you who don't remember the movie Spotlight, it exposed there's an ecosystem that supports this and protects this.
Right.
And that's one of the things that Sarah and I have discovered consistently. In addition to the patterns of abuse, there's patterns of protection by government, by religions, by all these things that are media that go on for whatever reasons. I mean, it's case by case, but normally they're afraid of speaking out. They're afraid of getting hurt. They're afraid of, you know, disrupting their own lives, but it allows it to go on.
Right.
You know, even the Epstein thing doesn't really been exposed
yet
entirely. It's just setting that template for someone who I think is pretty brave. And Sarah's going to go ahead and introduce Eric.
Thanks, Nip. Our guest today is a one-man content army on a mission to keep the heat on the IFB. Eric Skorinsky is the host and creator of the Preacher Boys podcast, which is a platform for survivor stories and the basis of an upcoming documentary film. He's rallying survivors and advocates who left the movement and others with insights to share. We were proud to be on his pod last year. We'll put that in the show notes. And he's trying to spark a fire of change within by leading current congregants, leaders, and pastors to effect change in their own churches.
He's using his microphone to help expose the abuse, giving survivors a safe place to engage and share their stories, and helping create a dialogue around understanding and deconstruct the religious subcultures that are fertile ground for this kind of crap.
Oh, and he's also building a pretty robust online recovery resource site with interviews and other resources from trauma therapists, mental health experts, law enforcement, clergy, and other specialists. And in the spare time, he's just, you know, casually launching a new podcast called Figuring It Out and Raising a Family. Quite the slacker.
I know. What, he had four podcasts that he's working on? He just had Shaq on? I mean, come on. I love his vibe. It's so great to be aligned with someone like this who's actually doing, in a lot of ways, what I want to do a little bit better, and just kind of taking how he does it and how his calming presence and what he does. I love it. Here's our chat about IFB, purity culture, and what it means to be a recovering evangelical with Eric of Preacher Boys.
Here we go. So welcome to A Little Bit Culty. It's been a long time coming, about a year, I think, we've been talking about doing this. When we first met, Eric, I think we just started, right? We were season one of A Little Bit Culty. We were just like babies. We learned from you.
Yeah, you just announced it, I think, when I reached out. Because I was waiting to reach out, and then you announced the show, and I was like, what better time to reach out and ask for you to come on than when you're newbies and you're saying yes, you know?
Yeah. Now we're really hard to get. We're like high demand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now we're charging.
We're charging now. 20 million an episode to do other people. So you got us when we were free.
Perfect.
How have you been since then?
Good. Yeah. I mean, it's been 11 months, I think. I mean, things have just gotten crazier, I think, just in the world in general. But yeah, the show's just kept growing and inbox keeps filling up and just a lot of the same old. And then also business on top of that and all those sorts of things. So yeah, it's been good.
Well, I have to say, when we were on your show, you know, obviously I knew a little bit about your story, but I hadn't really done the IFB deep dive at that point. And also since then, you know, we've been doing a year of A Little Bit Culty and heard a lot of stories about different people and different sects of different religions. And,
that's,
you know,
S-E-C-T for our listeners.
Sects. That's a hard word to say.
I wonder why those are so close together.
Sects and sects.
I mean, both are appropriate for this conversation. Right. So.
But I have to say, the video you sent me from, like, what is it, like the 80s, 1980s of David?
Yeah, David Hiles, Jack Hiles, yeah.
Those two, I was so fired up afterwards and, like, actually had a chat with our son about, you know, appropriate behavior with adults and people you trust. And I just wanted him to understand, like, what he needed to do. And sidebar, when I was growing up in the 80s here in Canada, I wanted to tell you, when I was raised, we were taught this song called My Body's Nobody's Body But Mine. You touch your own body. Let me touch mine. And there was this whole like education around appropriate touching and behavior and boundary crossing. And when I was listening and reading and prepping for this episode, I was so angry about what goes on, just in the world in general, but specifically in your, is denomination the right word?
Or yeah, they would say it's not, depending on when you catch them. But yeah, they're a denomination, no doubt about it.
Can you just like educate us and our listeners a little bit on what the IFB is and what that means?
Yeah, so the Independent Fundamental Baptist Movement, or IFB, because it takes a lot to say Independent Fundamental Baptist Movement every time you talk about it. There's anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 churches. They're not exactly the type that sign up for a lot of polls. It's hard to pinpoint the exact number, but that's about what the estimate is. I think there's about 1 million active people in it, which is a small number, but also a lot of people, you know, depending on what stat you're looking at. But really, to give a very simple view, they're very fundamentalist, hyper conservative. On the surface, it looks like a little country church on the corner. On the surface level, they're very quirky, like no music. I couldn't listen to music with a beat. Couldn't go to movie theaters, can't dance, can't drink, can't smoke, all that good stuff. Very 1950s traditional kind of Christianity. The topic of what I cover really dives deeper into kind of the power structure within it, which every church is led by one pastor who they call the man of God, who is essentially, I mean, the person that everybody goes to for where do they go to college. They ask them, you know, what decision do I need to make? They go to them for counseling. They go to them for every stage of life. They get their instruction from this guy. You know, like anything else you've talked about in episodes, sometimes there's good people that get caught up in those systems and they don't know that they're doing harm. But a lot of times it's like having a king. You can have a benevolent ruler who gives good advice and is generally pretty likable. And there are those people in it. And then you've got the person who, you know, sees an opportunity to run a congregation of 250 people and he knows that nobody's going to question him. And that leads to pretty horrendous results.
So you're at the whim of really kind of whatever pastor you have.
Yeah, definitely.
How does somebody get to that position? Are they voted in? Are they go up the ranks? Like, the NXIVM Stripe path? Or like, how do they get there?
Yeah. So the way that the best way to explain how it kind of works is like most, when we think of churches and denominations, we think of like the Catholic Church. So we think of like the Pope. I wasn't Catholic, so I'm probably getting the rank messed up, but you have cardinals and bishops and there's a triangular structure. So you kind of have the head honcho of the Pope and then it kind of
boils
down in this triangle. Right. Yeah. Like a pyramid. And with Baptist churches, it's more like circles. So you've got these networks of people that all affiliate with each other. And then they have their like own individual little kingdoms of their own church that they run. So they're not accountable to a large organization like a convention or something, but they definitely all affiliate, do conferences together, network. And so the way that these churches find pastors is from the Independent Baptist Bible College. So there's different Bible colleges. There's Hiles Anderson, Bob Jones, which a lot of people are familiar with because they're pretty huge in South Carolina. They'll find these churches. They'll find a student who graduated with their Bible degree, and then they'll come to the church candidate and then they vote them in. Yeah, to get into it, you typically have to graduate from a Bible college, one of the ones that they already like, then you candidate and then they put you in that position.
So would you say that there's kind of a structure and hierarchy and a kind of wink, a tacit thing going on where if I'm going into this and I want this opportunity to abuse power, mm-hmm. like you would recognize the structure as a place where you could get away with this on a certain level.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think, and again, like it's not always that sinister, but I think,
of course,
you know,
not. Yeah.
Definitely for some people. I mean, I remember thinking like, oh, it'd be so cool to be the pastor who gets to like tell people what to do and like sign Bibles when you go to a conference. Like that would be super cool.
People see positions of power and they're going to pursue it for whatever a power they want. You know, mm-hmm. they're going to serve the office and use the power accordingly, or the power is going to serve them and their needs. So that it's not one of the things that Sarah and I have always said is abuses of power aren't proprietary to any sort of domain. It goes on in every hierarchy. So, but it seems to me, if I wanted an opportunity to sexually abuse, there seems to be a path here and they know that going into it.
Yeah. It's an unquestioned position of authority. So you'll hear sermons all the time of like, don't speak out against the man of God. Don't question the man of God. They'll throw out those statements. I remember hearing stories in sermons where they'd say, oh, there was this couple and they rejected what the pastor told them to do. And they got in a car accident the next day. And it's like, God protects people who listen to the man of God, you know, talking with different people who've been abused within these movements. Like there was one story in particular where the abuser told her, he said, you know, that the pastor's not going to do anything. Like basically, I'm in good with the pastor, so the buck stops here. There's a very clear path there to be able to say what you want to say, to not be questioned. And anybody who does question, as my story is kind of proof, kind of gets pushed to the outside and shamed and slammed for the foreseeable future.
Let's share that. And I know you've talked about it lots on your podcast and in many interviews, but for those who don't know you, can you tell us a little bit about your background? And you know our a little bit culty structure. How did you get in and how did you get out? And you were born in. And I know that you yourself weren't abused, but you had your own wake up moment. Can you share that with our audience? And then we'll focus more on what you're doing now.
Sure. Yeah. No, I grew up in it. I was in the womb, you know, in pews in the church. And as long as I knew the sky was blue, you know, I was told about all the theology of the IFB church. So I spent 7 days a week on the campus. My parents were on staff at the Christian school in the church. So Monday through Friday, I was attending kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, all on the same 3 or 4 acre campus. Then Saturday, I would go load up in the van, go out and knock on doors, leave flyers on your door and invite you to church. And then Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, we had church services. So Sunday morning, we had Sunday school, then a main service, and then go pick up kids or drop off kids for church, do it again in the evening. And then Wednesday night, we'd have a prayer meeting or youth group.
And no movies, no music.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we could watch movies, but we couldn't go to movie theaters. We couldn't listen to music that had a beat in it.
How do you have music without a beat? Like, what does that sound like?
I mean, piano music, basically.
Okay.
Organs.
Yeah. Organs. We had an organ. All of my life was built around the church. And I want to make clear, like every time I talk about this, all of my memories are there. So all of my good memories for the first, you know, 18 years of my life are all on this campus. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, oh, there's a lot of really shitty stuff happening under the surface that kind of burst that bubble. That was really difficult because I was like, my whole life was that. My whole life was the church. So to question it or to take a stand against it was a scary thing.
What caused you to question it?
I mean, I was bought in, sold out. Like I wasn't the person that was like looking for a reason to leave, like I said. Basically what happened, very long story condensed down, one of the youth pastors from a church in Northern California was all of a sudden at our church, and he was attending and teaching sixth grade Sunday school, leading music. And I just Googled to see, because I had already kind of known him and known his church. I just Googled to see if there was an announcement of like why he left or like who replaced him, or totally earnestly just wanting to know, just curious. And the first like three search results on Google were warrant issued for Chico man's arrest, youth pastor in Chico molested teenage girl. And so I was sitting there as like a 17-year-old with this information of like, what do I do? Ended up telling some people within the church. I told my parents, I told my youth pastor, and the response from my parents was whatever pastor wants to do, specifically for my dad, was whatever the pastor wants to do is right. So whatever pastor says, if he says it's okay, it's okay. The response I got from my youth pastor was, you're being bitter. You need to forgive. You need to move on, let him move on with his life. And keep in mind, this is all while there's an active warrant. So he was literally moved out of state in the middle of the night to get away from being arrested. And I'm being told on my end, like, hey, you're being bitter. Your heart's not right. You know, you're trying to hurt the ministry. It destroyed a lot of relationships in a matter of a couple of weeks.
I heard you say that in another interview, and it seemed like a pretty obvious what we learned from Amanda Montell. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her.
Yeah, she was on my show.
She was on your show.
She's awesome.
So you know about the thought terminating cliche.
Oh yeah, reading her book, like that chapter or paragraph or whatever, like rocked my brain. Like I started thinking about. I was telling everybody, I was like basically proselytizing again. I was like evangelizing everyone with like, you need to read Amanda Montell's book.
Yes, us too.
Politics, religion, like sales pitches. Like I'll sit in a conversation and someone will be talking about politics. And I'm like, thought terminating cliche. When it comes to the church, thought terminating cliche. Reading the Bible, like I was reading, I was like, man, there's thought terminating cliches in here too. They're everywhere.
Right.
People argue with thought terminating cliches. That's the basis of a lot of people's argument.
You argue, you do thought too many cliches with me, Nip.
Yeah. No, I don't.
Let's talk about that.
You're being bitter, be better. So.
Well, that was one of them.
We always got that.
Don't be bitter, be better.
Yeah, they did a youth conference where they literally had up on the stage, like in a huge sign, be better, not bitter. There's stuff like, you know, you need to forgive, your heart's deceitful and wicked. You're like all these things would get thrown out all the time. And I was the problem, you know, like it was like, you have an issue with this? We've dealt with it. We know what's going on. It's not a big deal. Move on.
Right, because the man of God knows best.
Was this the first time you had ever kind of contested anything?
I always questioned, you know, like I always was like, why do we do this or what's the reason? Uh-huh. And they would give me the reason. And looking back, there were a lot that weren't good reasons. But as long as it made sense with me,
right?
Yeah, that's great. Like we read the Bible because that's what God wants us to do. That made sense with me. Okay, we'll do that. You know, that it's very simplistic. But I just wanted a reason. Even with my parents, me and my dad had never yelled at each other until this. This was the first time, like, you know, rebelling. Same with my youth pastor. Like, I used to go to my youth pastor's house, which is also a little weird now thinking back, but I used to go to his house like almost every week. We would watch movies. We would hang out. You know, we'd make pizzas and stuff. And then all of a sudden, due to this issue, he's going, you're bitter and you're this, and I'm concerned about you. You're going down the wrong path. That was a lot to take on as a 16 or 17 year old.
To me, that seems like all the adults and I don't know, mentors, examples that you had looked up to all of a sudden are adversarial.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you rely on in that? Because it seems to me you must know that you had done a lot of things right. I imagine it's kind of like you've been what sounds like the ideal student pupil. And the one time you see something horrific and you go talk to the people that had trained you and then they become adversarial when you do that. What was that like? Especially at that age.
It was the first time I'd ever had a fractured relationship with my dad ever. So it was hard. That happened. And then my youth pastor, who was like a second dad to me, you know, like that dried up. And really, I mean, I just was depressed. Like I just sat, like I had to go to, I was there still 7 days a week. I don't have a choice. I have to go to school, have to go to church, have to do all these things. I just had this hyperdrive of emotions, which was like, why does nobody see this? This is a big deal. And what made it bearable, I think, is that I was so convinced I was right. And I still am convinced that I was right, that I was able to stand in that and not get steamrolled. Once I realized that, okay, this isn't a big deal to them, it was pretty quick, not emotionally to move on from it, but I was very quickly able to say like, okay, I can stand my ground here because this is a non-negotiable. One of my friends always brings up, he remembers me going to the office. My dad was the principal, remembers me going to the office of the school because I saw this guy on the property. And my friend remembers hearing me across the campus, like screaming at the top of my lungs, like, why is this okay? Like, why are we letting this happen? You guys are supposed to protect us, all this kind of stuff. But like, that was how it was for the last 2 years of being there. It was just this like heavy conflict. It would quiet down. I'm trying to just put my head down and work. And then something else would happen. They put him in another position, heavy, heavy conflict, a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling, eventually graduated.
That's my question. So you are in the very place that indoctrinated you and indoctrinated in your morality.
Yeah.
And you see something that conflicts with your morality and you're young. Like, how do you have the conviction to know that you're right in the face of the people that trained you okay with something that is clearly not okay? Like, to me, that it's impressive, but I'm also interested in
like, how did you get out of the bubble enough? Of
that. Like, how do you know that? Like, what's the mechanism where, you know, it's kind of like waking up. Yeah, what's another extreme belief system and just going, nope. And then having kind of an about face towards everyone.
It's like being
around
taught
you.
The sky's blue your whole life, you know? Well, the thing is, and I've asked this question too, because I struggle to make sense of it to some level as well. Like, I've had this conversation with my dad recently. How do you, as a however old my dad is, 50 something or, you know, year old man, how do you not see this still? And it's been 10 years of this debate.
Oh, he still doesn't.
No, he's still there. He's still the principal.
Wow.
So again, it goes back to, how do you not see this? I saw it at 17. How do you not see it? I don't understand how people don't see it. I think there's a lot of layers to that. But I think the reason that I did notice it was wrong was one of the early things I thought about was, in our church, they always talked bad about every other religion. So always talking about Catholics or the non-denominational church down the road. When the Catholic Church scandal happened, like, yeah, that was like free game. Like, let's talk about the priests and how they do this. And let's talk about this church and how they do that. And so when this happened, the reason it burst my bubble is that I thought we were the city on a hill, isolated bubble that's perfect. And I remember asking my dad when it first happened, Dad, if this was the Catholic Church down the road, they'd be preaching Sunday about how there's pedophiles in the Catholic Church. But this happens in our church and we say, oh, we need to forgive and we need to have him go through some counseling, heavy quotes on counseling, and he's back in action. To me, it didn't add up why we were so hard on all these other churches in the area, even ones that agreed with our theology. We wouldn't take action when it came to our own school and church.
I see. So your church was flexing and boasting to be a certain way.
Oh, yeah. We're not like the skater church down the road where they wear ripped up jeans. We wear suits here, you know?
When you have a problem with another church and condemning another church for the same behavior you're doing, that didn't sit well with you. You can make a case for why it might be harder for someone who's devoted their whole life because they have to do major life changes and they're just not willing to do it. So it might be easy to ignore. That's an oversimplification of why they might keep it. But that fragment didn't sit well with you.
Yeah. I think the other reason some people stay in it too is, you're taught the Bible verse. I can't quote it off the top of my head right now, but there's a Bible verse that Jesus says, people are going to hate you because they first hated me. You know, so basically
Jesus
tells people like, oh, you're following me. People are going to hate you. And people are primed for persecution. Like there's going to be these stories that come out. People are going to tell lies to tear apart the church. People are going to do this. And so I think a lot of times people just put in their mind like, oh, that can't be true.
Right.
True in our setting.
That's very so consistent.
Right.
Jinx, no. Yeah. It's so consistent.
Well, prepackaged narratives to your doubt.
Well, and you said this in one of your last episodes, Nippy, like you were talking about how these stories are all the same. Yeah, we didn't have these crazy things that NXIVM had. But then watching the documentary, there's 95% of it I recognized. I remember like even asking like, were you guys religious? It just sounds like church camp, which is really scary. Yeah, there's little different things like Scientology might have more financial abuse or NXIVM with branding. But ultimately, the people in power are the same. The way that the structure protects them is the same. The way that we lie to ourselves to stay in is the same. The questions about why did someone wake up and someone didn't is the same. It just repeats itself all over the place, which is why I think it's important to talk about because people don't realize it.
My segue to the next question is, what took you on the journey from your bubble being broken to, wanting to take on the IFB?
So when I left, I just wanted out of Christianity entirely because that was Christianity to me. We were the ones that had it right. So there was either Christians, us, or there was like the wrong people like Southern Baptists. You know, I wanted to be done. I ended up not being done. I got roped into another church, and that's a whole nother story for another day of my journey on that side. But I didn't want to be a part of it. I wanted to repair my relationship with my dad. I tried to mend relationships with some people, even though I hadn't burned the bridges. Like, I didn't want to be the guy that left on bad terms. So I tried to do this like reconciliation stuff with my youth pastor. They were a waste of time to try to do. I didn't want to be part of that world. You know, I'd talk about it over lunch with people, but like, I didn't want to be associated with it because there was a lot of bad stuff. I felt embarrassed that, you know, if someone Googled my name, maybe my dad, who's the assistant pastor, is going to pop up in principal, you know, and this is the school, here's the article, like all this kind of thing. For me, what it was back in 2019. So I graduated in 2013. And then 2019, this story happened out of Florida. And it was the exact same story that had happened with this guy that was moved to our church. It was the same, you know, he was manipulating this girl in the school. He was telling her all this stuff. He had like opened up a phone line for her on the church plan, was like communicating with her, like all this crazy stuff. And I started seeing that there were pastors raising money for the legal funds for this confessed abuser. He had made a plea deal, and there were articles being written by Independent Baptist pastors saying that it was plea bargaining, so it wasn't a real confession. We would need to pay for his things. They were sending out in church letterhead, help pay for his legal fees, his attorney fees, all these things. And I pulled into my apartment and just recorded like a 7-minute video saying, I haven't said anything about this. I've been out for a long time, but if you're associated with, and then I named like all the pastors that I had seen post about it.
Good for you.
And all the ministries. One of the ministries was one that I had literally worked with doing video work. And so I said, if you're affiliated with them, and your church is still partnered with them, you need to leave. And went back into my house, was like, you know, I'm going to do a documentary about this, you know, and was like, I'm going to do something. And so I cut together like a 3-minute kind of proof of concept, said, if you want to share your story, just reach out to me. And like the next day I had like 20 people that had inboxed me saying I was abused. This is my story. It's kind of skyrocketed from there. I've talked to hundreds of people at this point who have shared. And like I said, I was waiting. Like I kept waiting for there to be a spotlight report like the Catholic Church got, where it's like, here, we blew the lid off of it. There's going to be all this reporting and change. And I just kept sitting there waiting. There were some, it would be a big explosion. And then because newspapers don't have the resources to keep doing it, they couldn't carry the story onward. They couldn't go to future court things. They couldn't go to future stories. Like it had to be a one and done massive article that, you know, stopped there.
We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag I Got Out movement and find resources at igotout.org. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Did anyone learn a language in high school and then let it go and then have regrets about that later? If you're anything like me, then maybe you'll relate. I did French all the way up into 12th grade, and then I let it go. I mean, I lived in Montreal for a few years and, you know, practiced a bit, but it just slipped away. And then I found Babbel. Babbel is the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. And thanks to Babbel's addictively fun and easy little bite-sized language lessons, I've been able to get back my French. I've actually found learning French to be fun again. And c'est vrai, je parle français. With Babbel, you only need 10 minutes to complete a lesson, so you can start having real-life conversations in a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 150 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, not computers. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. And with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Formidable. That means wonderful in French. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Clearly still working on that. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code CULTY. That's BABBEL.com, code CULTY.
Do you think they're protected?
The churches?
Yeah. Like, do you think there's people that are incentivized to protect the churches and in some capacity? I know that's been in a lot of the things.
Like Scientology is protected by the, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
By the U.S. government.
Yeah. So first of all, the independent Baptist churches definitely know their laws. And so freedom of religion covers a lot of things.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, we're talking like full on group homes and things that are extremely abusive and paddlings and force feedings and all
that
kinds of stuff.
Is that still happening right now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that stuff that's going on. There's a IFB school in Missouri right now. And I think there's been, I'm lowballing right now. There's been about 15 different staff members that have been charged. I mean, force feedings, they had a room literally for restraining kids. I mean, there's heavy abuses that go on within the whole troubled teen space.
Oh.
As far as the cover-up, though, there's a lawyer. His name's David Gibbs, and he works with the Christian Law Association. The Christian Law Association is an independent Baptist legal wing, basically. And so whenever there is a case of child abuse, whenever there's a case of fraud, anything, he'll be there. Like any case where there's sexual abuse in the independent Baptist, like you can find some connection to David Gibbs. He literally just last year spoke at the graduation at my high school that I graduated from. And like a month before, he was basically going against 4 victims of abuse in Wildomar, like an hour away.
Jesus.
How is this allowed?
God, wouldn't you think the fact that you have a legal wing in your church is a symptom of something?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, they talk about it's protecting religious freedom, but like you look at, you know, we talk about Jack Hiles, like,
Jesus.
I mean, you have bus kids being, you know, raped by bus workers. You have youth pastors raping girls in their church. And then you have this lawyer coming in with a tear in his eye saying, let's raise money to help this poor family. And he's talking about the abuser and his family. And he's talking about these lies coming against the church. I sat in conferences when 2020 did a documentary about a girl that was raped. He stood up and said, none of you need to watch that documentary. It's full of lies. It's satanic. It's attacking the church. None of you need to watch it. It's just more lies against the church. That's the kind of stuff where, like, when you're in it, you're just told, like, these women that say they were raped, they're just trying to tear apart what God's doing here. These kids that say they were abused, they're just trying to attack the church.
As a parent of 2 boys, a mama, I'm trying to, like, keep my calm. But that link you sent me, and I will put it in the show notes so people who want to do the deep dive down the dark path, it enraged me, the specific stories. I just don't understand how the parents don't freak out. One of the stories was that one of the boys was naughty at church camp and the pastor put chili peppers in the kid's anus as the punishment, or squishing his penis between a pane of glass on a table. Like, I don't know what I would do if I found out that was done to my kids.
I think I've handled that one, Sarah.
I've gotten feedback that I've been a little bit angry recently in the podcast, especially after the bento box.
Appropriate outrage.
It's appropriate. I just don't understand how the parents don't go in there and settle it.
We were talking about this right before you jumped on. People don't get upset about things that are so blatant. There's people that will share links about deep state this and, you know, all this crazy shit. Like I see people, this is prime example. I see parents that I'm still friends with on Facebook sharing links about Pizzagate and all these like crazy conspiracy theory nut job things, these trafficking stories that aren't based in any reality whatsoever.
Right.
And then you'll talk about the church that their pastor was at last where he abused somebody. Or you talk about the college that they went from, like, that had interracial marriage bans till 2002. And all of a sudden you're attacking the church. People aren't living in they're just living in this bubble of saying like, oh, it can't happen in our group. And the reality is, you know, I was on a show and someone said, oh, it's not going to happen until it happens to someone that they know. They said, oh, it's really sad. They're not going to realize it till it is their kids or it is their family. Right. And the reality is, like, sometimes not even that. Like, I've talked to so many victims where their parents go to the church where they were abused. Again, that's something I just don't understand. I think at that point, you're kind of without excuse.
Well, I agree. And the thing that I see, you know, you see it in all these domains. It's when it's not your group, you're outraged. But when it's your group, the gymnastics people have to do to justify it or
There's some kind of explanation for this.
Yeah, there's a fault. They falsify the narrative.
So people are just too committed. They're just too, they just don't want to lose their community. Like, what holds it in place for IFB?
Well, it's case by case, wouldn't it be?
Broadly, it's your religion. This is something too, we can sit here and go, it's silly people believe X, whatever that thing is. Right. It's easy to do that. Like, and we all do it. Mm-hmm. We all will hear a Scientology story and go like, how did they stay in that for so long?
NXIVM too.
Yeah, NXIVM, like, for sure. You know, I understood NXIVM. Like when I was watching, I was like, like the first three episodes were like, yeah, we do this, you know, like this makes sense. But that's how it is. Like, it doesn't seem crazy when you're in it.
Right.
I believed that we had the word of God in the King James translation of the Bible and that the Southern Baptist Church down the road that used the English Standard Version didn't have a real Bible.
Right.
We had it. We have the truth. Mm-hmm. We wear the right clothes. We do the right things.
Us versus them.
Yeah. When you're talking about leaving the church, it's like, well, if this is God's will for me to be here and I go against the church, I'm going against God.
It's like ultimate gaslighting right there.
Yeah. Like I'm going to go to hell if I take a stand against whatever the thing is. That's a lot of pressure. And again, we can say, oh, that's silly. Why do they believe in hell? It doesn't matter. They do.
Yeah.
So it's going to alter how they take action.
That's a good point.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's just they do, right?
The framework of the belief protects any future action because you can't see outside of the bubble of that belief system.
Right. If someone is a suicide bomber and they truly believe they're going to go to heaven, blowing themselves up, it doesn't matter if we don't need a debate. Is there a heaven if you blow yourselves up?
They believe it.
We just need to know, like, they believe it. And so watch out.
It's the same thing for us when we were leaving and there were people who were more bought in than us. Like, I know that people think I was like the most devoted, but I wasn't, you know, in many ways I was outer, inner circle.
Well, what you were devoted to, I think, was different.
Yeah. I wasn't devoted to Keith and I wasn't as indoctrinated. And the people who were would say things like, but what's bad about branding exactly? And what if it's for your growth? You know, and like, and there's people who still believe that. So I understand your point and it's noted. And I'll try calm down.
To Eric's point too, you get a good impression of someone's understanding of a problem with the response to it. And a lot of people were saying when Sarah left, you know, but it was consensual. And my response was no, and it was consensual. That's not a justification for it. That actually underscores more
how
of the
wrong
problem.
It was. And it wasn't really consensual.
When it comes back to the belief, you look at this stuff and it's like, if you're weighing someone's eternal destiny over their head. So David and Jack Hiles, which people should Google them. I mean, you can find a billion things about it. But like, you know, the pastor, the son-in-law who ended up taking over the church later down the road, he's in prison right now for sexual abuse of a teenage girl. But he was writing notes to her saying, you're God's gift to me. Like God shows his love to me through you. So if you're a 15-year-old girl.
And your leader.
And your leader, who is one of the most powerful leaders in the denomination, is saying, God gave you to me to show his love to me. Do you really want to be the person engaging in spiritual warfare against the leader by refusing?
No.
Again, it's how consensual can that be?
That's like with the Mormon church and then saying, well, I spoke to God. God says I need you as my wife, even though you're only 12.
That is a brilliant marketing plan.
It really
God
is.
God told us we need your money and your bodies.
I got a direct line to God. I mean, he told me this. Jesus.
The ultimate thought terminating cliche.
Yeah, Nippy and I still use that. I say, Nippy, I spoke to God and he wants you to do the dishes and take out the garbage.
That's how she keeps me in line, Eric.
Now. Yeah, I just dialed God and, you know.
I've cleaned the house, the dishes, and the speaking toilet before of which, I realized that she conned me.
Did you listen to our episode with Alice Gretchen by any chance?
I don't think so.
Well, you don't have to have. She was ex-evangelical. And by the way, just for my non-educated mind, can you educate me on the difference between evangelical and Baptist?
Yeah. Again, this goes back into like what a poll would say. It's like when you read a poll from like the Barna group, it's going to say Christianity, which is like Christians, Catholics, Mormons, all of the Jesus followers, basically, or professing Jesus followers. And then if you're sitting in it in the independent Baptist framework, you would look and say like evangelicals would be the people who have softened the Bible and have, you know, they have praise bands and they have denominations and all these sorts of things. And we don't have that. Like, so their big claim was we're independent. So we're independent. We don't have external accountability, which is a big red flag that they like wear right on the sign. We don't have this external accountability. No one tells us what to do in our church.
Except God.
Right. Except for God and your pastor, who are one and the same within the denomination. You know, for them, they would just say like, we have it right. And then there's like evangelicals and Mormons and Catholics and fill in the blank with every other religious group. They've polluted and corrupted and perverted the word.
Right.
So we're like we're it, you know.
Right. So one of the things I thought was interesting with Alice is that she describes herself now as an atheist and you describe yourself as recovering. And some of your fellow former fundies, they hit the eject button and walk away completely from the entire framework of belief. What's your path been like since being involved in this work? Your spiritual path?
Like I said, it was rocky, you know, when I left. Ended up getting back into it at a church. Long story short, ended up leaving again. I would say I was like a very devout Christian, but I was unaffiliated with any denomination. I didn't go to a church. I have a 4-year-old. I didn't want to put her in a nursery. Right. That was terrifying to me.
Yes.
It's crazy to me. People leave their kids like at the movie theater and a child. Like I just can't wrap my mind around it. It scares me so much. And doing the show, doing Preacher Boys, like I'm like 212 episodes in now, maybe one out of every 10 people I talk to ends up doing the show. Like I'll talk to a ton of people. I've seen crazy stories. Like there's an episode we recorded that I haven't been able to release like legally because it would have put her in a dangerous situation. But the heaviness of some of these stories takes a toll.
Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that?
I didn't well for the first year. Literally like around the time that we talked, I was just depressed a lot. 2020 was a hard, brutal year. 2021 was hard and brutal. And what made it worse is that I was sitting there going like, oh, I'm still a Christian. I would log into Twitter and I had pastors preaching, you know, oh, you're dragging millions to hell with the Preacher Boys podcast, which he overestimated my listenership.
Just take that and run.
I wish.
Yeah. You've got people who message me who would say I'm on your side and they'll say, you know, obviously I can't support you publicly, but I just want you to know, keep up the good work. And it's like, yeah, just don't tell me anything at all because like that's worse to me that you know that this is right, but you're going to keep quiet about it.
Cowards.
Do you tell them that?
Yeah.
I told a guy
called me. He was an independent Baptist pastor. And he said, look, you know, I know you understand like being part of the denomination. I don't want to tweet about it because I don't want people to get the wrong idea. And I was like, I'd rather you just not support it at all because you're not helping me by just quietly supporting. I was like, I've got people blowing me up on Twitter all day long who are pastors, that if one or two of you would just say something, we could start seeing some actual change. But getting back to like my faith, seeing the response of pastors and then seeing like, you know, I was involved with a recovery group, which, you know, was a group of people saying they were recovering fundamentalists, you know, when I started saying, oh, I'm grappling with my actual faith, like, I don't think I believe this anymore due to seeing all of this craziness happen and due to seeing the responses of evangelicals and pastors and people saying, don't attack the church by doing this. You know, when I brought that up, the recovery group was like, yeah, no, we don't want to be affiliated with you anymore. It kicked me out. What? I've gotten the shit kicked out of me by Christians a lot over the last 2 years. And that's been evangelicals, fundamentalists, like just broadly, like religious people, when you start talking about the church, it literally to them is sacred. And so it's put a target on my back from a lot of different people who are like, why are you attacking the country church down the road? Like, what do they do? It's like, nah, it's not.
That's so
not
hard.
Funny you should ask.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right.
Would you like to see a list? You know, I relate. I mean, it's interesting doing this pod for us, like we try to cover different groups and organizations and religions. And there's, you know, a couple we haven't even touched yet just because, you know, we haven't found the right person to interview, but also, no. You know, I know people in it. Like it's, you, mm-hmm. you do get a target on your back, but like, you know, this is what, once you get fired up and you start talking, it's hard to stop. Oh.
And the thing I realize is that, and it's one reason I do listen to your show, you know, I really do like the approach to it. And one thing that I, you know, I told Nippy before we hit record is like, I like that tongue in cheek, you know, I love that you guys are so refrained with what you think about things, mm-hmm. you know, like you share very heavily when you're pissed, you can tell. And, but the thing is, I've realized in the last 2 years, like no matter how much you couch what you're saying, no matter how many caveats you add, no matter how much you right. say not all churches, mm-hmm. no matter how much you say probably not you, people are going to be pissed if it touches their territory.
Totally.
And so, totally. You know, if I'm going to call out rape in a church, like I'd rather just be blunt about it than saying, now look, before I talk about this, I know it's not all churches. I know it's not. If someone's upset, I'm talking about their church.
Right.
If you're not upset and you agree that rape is bad, I'm not.
Right.
I'm not
honestly,
talking about it.
Honestly, I think you hit the nail on the head.
Finally, 45 minutes in, I've hit a nail. Good.
you hit a few. I mean,
when people like, I've aired my support, even just kind of offhand for certain people. And every time I put my flag in the ground, it's very small. It's like one or two. Someone's going to send me an email with a link and how my thinking is wrong. Listen, I have a different opinion. I have a different stance
on things.
I'm certainly willing to kick it around. That's what this is about, right? And yours is extreme. So like, I like the fact that like I'm standing against rape against this church instead of you lambasting me for it, right? Get curious. Mm-hmm. Your curiosity can free you from the thing that I'm talking about. And to your point, I'm probably saying something that conflicts with what your stance is, which is okay.
I had a pastor, I mean, when I announced that I left the faith entirely, he tweeted and he said, it's sad when someone focuses on the bad so much that that's all that they can see. And then he said something about like, I focused on Jesus, mm-hmm. so I've seen the good, you know, like I haven't lost sight of the good. And my response to him was like, I've been focused on the bad mm-hmm. for the last 2 years. The bad seemed awfully focused on my denomination for the last 18 and the last several decades before that and the last mm-hmm. century that it's been around. It seems like without focusing on it, we had a predator shuffle to my church. Without focusing on it, the person I worked for in ministry was paying me 11 grand a year while paying himself a high six-figure salary. It seems like without focusing on it, I got fired mm-hmm. from that same job because I didn't want to pray and lay my hand on a flag and hope that Donald Trump would be president. Like, it seems to me that the bad was kind of drawn to the denomination. And instead of asking why I'm seeing the bad and focusing on the bad, why is there bad if we're claiming to be this righteous group that's set on a hill and supposed to be the example for all mankind? Like, why is the bad here?
That's such a good message. And I think that's something that all the denominations, all the religions, all the groups have to be able to do. If you're saying, like the be better, not bitter, and don't focus on the bad or whatever. Next thing we used to call it a shifter strategy. Keith taught us this. It's like, look over here. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we're talking about this. Let's focus on this. It's important to look at this. Mm-hmm. We must for the safety of our children. Yeah. I mean, my goodness, it just hurts my heart that this is happening. And I guess my question for you now is like, what do you say to people who might be listening to this? Because probably people in IFB are not listening to this, but or they might, and I hope they do. If we use the right hashtags, you know, if they're listening to this, what would you say to them to help you change that pattern of avoiding this conversation?
I mean, it's it's kind of that thing that was said earlier, like it's be curious about it. What is being said? It's hard whenever this question comes up because I think about like, what would I have listened to in it if it was someone else? And I would have been like, why would I listen to them? Like they said a bad word on a podcast. Yeah. So like, obviously they're not Christians and they're not, you know, whatever. There's a lot of things that are going to be said there, but I would just say like, how many people does it have to happen to for it to become an issue? And how many times does it have to be covered up before it's a systemic issue? I'll say this specifically, if you're a pastor listening to this, because I know that there's IAP pastors that listen to all the stuff that I do, because I get tweets about it and sermon things about it. My question to them would just be like, when do you address that this is like a really toxic environment that's producing this? I don't judge any pastor. When you have a church of 50 people, if you're there for a couple decades or a couple years, you're going to have something bad happen in your church, in your congregation. The pedophiles are everywhere. You're going to have, if you get 100 people in a room, there's someone really shitty there. At some point, there's someone bad there. I don't judge someone for that. But how do you react when you find out? Is it cover it up because we want to protect the church? Is it cover it up because we believe that he has more value to us than this girl does? That's the thing, is like, I'm not going after every church and saying like, oh, if you have anything bad happen ever, you're evil and wicked and you should be destroyed. But when it's happening consistently, when you have churches like Faith Baptist Church in Wildomar that has four or five of these cases over a decade with four or five different people, start asking questions. Like, why is this happening? Why do we seem to be like a lightning rod for abuse? Again, I'm not asking people to like leave their faith or do something like that. Why this? Why is this the thing that is inherently better than everything else when it is having the same issues as all the people you're preaching against?
Hey there. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Quick reminder to follow us on Instagram. You can also share your favorite episodes with friends who may or may not be in a cult, and also reach out to us to let us know who you would love to hear as a guest. And now, a word from our sponsors. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. One of the things I saw in one of your other interviews is your new mantra about the microphone. So what needs to happen now to expose this stuff?
Yeah, it's conversations. Like, this is something that people get wrong, is that they look at people, like listening to this episode, there's people that go, man, Sarah and Nippy are just great advocates. I'm glad that someone is being an advocate. And, you know, because you have a podcast and a platform, and they'll look at me and go, wow, that's great. I wish, I would love to be one, but I don't have a podcast, or I don't have a rally that I host, or I don't have this, or a picket, or whatever it is. You just need to find a person who has a story. Sarah, you said this in one of the recent episodes, like, hold space for them. There's so many opportunities we have on a small scale, a big scale, to advocate for other people. And so when you notice something's wrong, the easy option is what I initially did, which is, that was awful for me, a totally self-centered approach. That was awful that someone was abused and I had to deal with my youth pastor being mean to me because I said something about it. I got the easy version of the story. I left for the rest of those couple years not thinking about, what about all these other people that were hurt? What about the people that are still being hurt? What about the people that I left flyers on their door who are now going to the same church as a pedophile that I invite? Like, I have a responsibility to talk about this. And I still, like, every day I think about, if someone gets hurt, because he's still at the church.
What?
His wife is literally, his wife's the principal of the school now that I went to. It's like, he has so much access. And for me, it's like, if something happens and I don't say anything, like I'm a part of this. Right?
Yeah.
Whether I'm a part of the denomination or not, I am. Find a way to help people share their stories. It doesn't have to be a podcast. Like it takes a certain type of person that can get in front of a microphone and be willing to do this. Mm-hmm. You either love it or you absolutely hate it, you know, but it could mean when someone at work tells you that someone harassed them, go with them to HR. Find a way for them to tell their story. Repost someone's episode when they share something that's difficult. Text somebody and ask, how can I help you? Like find a way to pass the mic to somebody. I mean, I grew up listening to pastors, the whole pass the mic thing. I grew up listening to pastors who now I know are connected with abusers who were abusers themselves. And every single Sunday, two times a day, sometimes three if they did Sunday school too. And then Wednesday night, they got a microphone. Got to go to conferences, got a microphone, got to share their version of the story, got to share why the church was the way it was and how great things were, what God was doing. But the people that never got the microphone were the women and children being abused in the church. So how can we, when we leave an organization like this, take the microphone from those people, take the attention from those people, from the Keith Raniere's, from the Jack Hiles, from the, you know, whoever you want to fill in the blank there, and now give that to people who were harmed by them and let them share their story in the way that they want to share it. That's a powerful thing to be able to do for someone. And it's something that, again, people assume because I don't have a million followers, I can't be an advocate. Do it with your family. Do it with your friend. Like, do it with your three or four people that you can do it with because it can make a big difference.
What a great message.
Yeah, such a good message. And I saw in your merch store that you have a shirt that says purity culture is break. Could you just tell us, just give us a little nugget about what you mean by that for those who don't know what purity culture is and how it relates to rape?
It proves that I don't like beating around the bush, I guess.
Yes, it's very direct.
I mean, this kind of goes back to the culture. I mean, my show Preacher Boys is because they called like young pastors and young kids that were going to college to become pastors, they called them Preacher Boys. And so I named my show that. It kind of gets the attention of anybody who grew up in it. And then everyone else goes like, oh, you're a preacher? Like they get confused what the name is. It really is that. There's a very much a boys club mentality within the independent Baptist world. Purity culture is an issue. I'm sure if you've talked to people in the evangelical world, they brought it up and on some level.
Yep.
But essentially, the idea that women are responsible for the actions of men is something that's very deeply entrenched within the IFB movement. You know, that's the reason that women wear skirts and not pants because pants outline your leg. Women can't wear shirts that go more than two fingers below their neck because that would show cleavage. You know, they have to close pin this slit in the back of a skirt so you can't see the back of their leg. Like there's all these rules and restrictions and regulations on women. And so you've got these two things. You've got the woman who's being taught their whole life, like you're a temptress, you are full of shame. You are responsible for if any guy looks at you and lusts after you and commits adultery in his heart, you caused it. And then you have men who are being taught to act like children their entire lives and saying, don't jerk off, don't have sex. But once you get married, anytime you want it, you've got it. And then you've got a spouse who's not allowed to say no. So you've got this very horrible environment in which we're hypersexualizing young kids and talking about whether or not, you know, little kids can wear sleepers because it shows too much, or they can't wear this because it shows too much when they're like 6 months old. Then they grow up to be 20 years old, getting married out of high school to some preacher boy, and they have a toxic, unhealthy relationship where they don't understand consent. They don't understand their own sexuality. They don't understand what a healthy relationship looks like. And so for me, like that's one of the areas I've dipped in to addressing, like, okay, we're having all of this. We have a rape culture situation within this denomination. What are we teaching from an early age that kind of leads to that? I'm not saying that people are not responsible for their actions, because I think some people will say, oh, I was raised in it, whatever. We can still look at what some of the causes are without alleviating people of their own responsibility. If you're raping somebody, you're responsible for that. I don't care what you were taught. I was taught all that stuff and I don't rape people.
Correct.
So you have a responsibility there, but that's in a nutshell what it is.
Thank you. Thank you. Probably could do a whole episode on that. You know, you are part of this team, you know, in terms of shining light on abuses and felt that from the moment we spoke on your pod last year. And I really commend you. I know it's dark work and it's hard. And Nippy and I have certainly been depressed after covering certain content. No, it's really difficult.
The way you go about it's great.
Yeah.
It's heavy stuff. I've been telling people, I'm like, I feel like there needs to be something for people that do this, like this weird niche of things. Cause it is, especially early on, like, I don't know about you, but in the beginning, I didn't have any awareness of the toll it would take So I would schedule like, I'll do three today. I'll do three of these interviews. And then you like, you know, and then you're crying in a Whole Foods parking lot going like, yeah, that was not smart. You know, like,
Eric, let's start a support group for.
We figured that out and we tried to do two in one day? Sarah?
Yeah, we know. Like, I learned very quickly, one max. And ideally, now I'm down to like, I'll only do one a week. One a week now. And I have to buffer it with either yoga or a walk on the seawall or on the outside and always a hot bath.
I had a trauma therapist that gave me like the best advice ever. Because I was telling her, I was like, I'm so depressed. I like interviewed her and then I was like stealing therapy, you know, and I was like, man, I'm so depressed. I like broke down the other day. Honestly, I don't even know if I could keep doing this. And she's like, what's your schedule? And I was like, well, I have like three interviews after this. She's like, don't do that. And then she was like, do you like take walks or anything? And I was like, no. She's like, go outside.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Do your interview and then just go for a walk. And so now, whenever I do these, like I'll go with my daughter and check the mail or like go walk outside. And it's like just taking that time to process it. Instead of what I was doing, which is like, I'll do like five of these. And then like at the end of the day, I'm like, oh my God. Like I just talked to like four people about the most horrific things that can happen in your life. You know, literally one of them, I mean, hasn't even been released, but like, it's one that I was like, I don't know if I can share this. Cause this is like heavy, heavy stuff. Yeah. You're just absorbing that.
You really have to take care of yourself. That's my solicited advice to you. And maybe we will start a support group. We'll see if Yanya Lalich can start a, take back your life for podcasters helping others take back your life. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you want to say before we wrap?
The only thing I would add, we talk about the difficulty of leaving. And I know there's a lot of people like, because of COVID, I mean, people are leaving faith traditions left and right. You know, people are, hey, I can't go to church. And then they sit home at Sunday and go like, why were we doing this every Sunday? Or they're sitting there with toxic work cultures or whatever the thing is. There's a lot of people in transition mode right now. I would say two things, and they might seem contradictory, but I hope people hear it for what it is. Number one, don't jump right into something full force, right out of it. I see a lot of people that leave the IFB, a lot of people that leave environments, and then they go join like the most unhealthy other thing that's across town. Like take time to just be free and untethered for a little bit and just audit where you're at. Now, the flip side of this is don't stay away from all community in general.
Right.
Like find people who are not like-minded. Yes. That's a word that gets used to trap a lot of people. Don't find like-minded people. Find people committed to the same process as you. So if you find other people that are reading books, questioning things, you know, trying to recover, taking walks between podcast interviews, like, you know, there is something special, like even today, like talking to people who are doing similar things and being able to say like, yeah, I feel that too. That
my
fills
heart
you
is
up
full.
A little bit. If I can plug, that's kind of why we're starting our new podcast.
Tell us. It was one of my questions. Yeah,
so our new podcast, Figuring It Out, really is based in that. I was sitting there talking with a friend of mine. I was questioning faith, you know, doing this, trying to figure out like, how do I parent? What's my moral code? What's this? So we started the show really to have conversations as we figure it out and talking to people who can all bring different perspectives, all bring different thoughts and take what resonates with us and apply it and ignore what doesn't make sense. You know, we've already had guests say things. I'm like, nah, that's not for me. But it's good to be able to have those conversations and be committed again, not to being like-minded with the people around you, but being committed to the same process. How do we deal with conflict? How do we grow? How do we study? And moving forward from there, there's a great lineup of guests on there. Like, I mean, we had Shaquille O'Neal, which was pretty dope on there.
Shaq Fu.
Pretty cool.
Look at Nippy's face. You see Nippy's face right now.
We had like Rob Dyrdek, Elena Cardone. Like we've got some cool names on there. I'm on there. it's really cool. And I think it's going to help a lot of people who are having that angst right now of questioning where they're at.
Well, we'll listen and then also put it on our resource list for our listeners. Cool. So that's amazing. We really commend you and feel, you know, proud to know you. So keep it up.
I really enjoyed listening to you and how you have a good grasp on it and how you're going about helping people. I'm going to copy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Imagine yourself walking into a forest. You can see the path and the trees high above you. The air is crisp. You are walking towards your happy place. Allegedly, say it with me. Anything said here on this podcast about alleged cults alleged MLM schemes, alleged douchebaggery, mindfuckery, criminality, spiritual fraud, or the like, is offered purely as commentary, because the views and opinions expressed on A Little Bit Culty do not necessarily reflect on official policy or position of the podcast. And any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. So just let these words drift into your mind without needing to focus on any of them. You are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. Nobody's mad at you, unless you're actually a narcissistic, culty criminal. If that's you, cut that shit out. Don't be a fuckwad. But if that's not you, again, you are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. A Little Bit Culty loves you.
That was great. I really enjoyed chatting with him, and I feel like we say this with all our guests, that we could chat for hours. But the one thing we forgot was to ask him about what chaps his ass. And I feel like, you know, obviously the sort of the whole content of the episode, of the fact that this goes on, is really upsetting in general. But as you know, we do like to bring the light into it. So we asked him to send in his, and here it is.
Here's one thing that chaps my ass that has nothing to do with religion, spirituality, cults. The number one thing that chaps my ass is actually something my wife does all the time. I'm so sorry, babe, if you're listening to this. But I hate, with a burning, undying passion, when people put things in front of the TV. So we've got our TV on an entertainment center, and my wife will always try to put like vases or flowers or things that take up like an inch, and they crop over like an inch into the screen. So like it'll either block a subtitle or it'll block some details in the corners. It drives me crazy. And the amount of people that do that in front of their television, like, I'm a huge movie nerd. When I go to someone's house and watch a movie, like, I'll get up and move whatever's in front of the TV, because that is so obnoxious and terrible. And needless to say, it chaps my ass.
This is the double whammy. This is an ass chapping and a word salad from a pastor.
Not only is it a pastor, it's Pastor Jack Hiles, who we've since learned is one of the main culprits in this situation. And like I said at the beginning, we'll post a link that has a news report about the Hiles family and the things that they have been accused of. So this is a quote from him. Word salad.
There are those who would lead us to believe that women was an afterthought of God. There are those who would lead us to believe that God created everything and was displeased because there was something he forgot to create. Something he didn't do exactly properly. So in order to correct his mistake, he created woman. There she was, thrown in as a creation's bonus on the side, sort of as an afterthought of God. That isn't true. Did you know that woman is the ultimate creation of God? She was an independent creature and, by the way, could have lived alone. The Bible never says it is not good for women to be alone. You wish she had known that years ago, don't you? The Bible says it is not good that man should be alone. Be reminded, man was created before woman. In God's divine order, he increased the importance and magnitude of the creation with the passing of the days, by Pastor Jack Hiles.
What does that mean? Like,
Well, it's vague enough for you to connect the dots of women aren't here to serve men, but men don't like being alone. So what up, women? What are you going to do about it? That's kind of what I hear.
I thought it was a subtle way of saying, don't forget the order. Like, it's saying, yeah, they're independent, but man can't be alone, and man came first, and that's the divine order. I don't know. I'm just like, it just gives me the creeps in general.
Also kind of saying, you know, thrown as creation's bonus, sort of an afterthought, that isn't true. So it professes to uphold women, but then subtly gives them what their duties are.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's a profession of one thing, and then right. It's actually another.
So it reinforces the paradigm, but pretends not to.
Exactly.
Then you have what are considered mostly liberal movements in our country right now that threaten that paradigm, and then they dig in, because then they have to reconcile that's how they live their life, right? Because liberal party traditionally challenges those narratives and those paradigms. That's what, quote, being liberal is supposed to do. It's supposed to go, and conservatives don't particularly care about doing that in the same vigor, right? So a lot of the things that are going on right now that are ushering in equity threaten that foundation. And I think that's why you have the chasm
of right, left, and why religion always goes right for the most part.
Ugh.
So anyway.
I just feel like I got to wash my mouth
but
out.
That's what's so important about this work. You have to really untangle the assumptions and get people just having healthy dialogues as opposed to just digging in on their beliefs. Anyway, hopefully that's what we're doing. We're stretching that. And thank you, Eric.
Go check out Eric's work.
Please.
Stay out of cults. Watch for the word salad. Thanks, everybody, for your support, especially with our still dealing with the the aftermath of the bento box. That's a big one. We'll update as that shit show unravels. Thanks, guys. Thanks for supporting us. Have a great week. Bye. See you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean, I'm hanging on to the weight of my love. If I let go of it all, I could leave, but I know. Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like, take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. It takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty.